What I wanted to start with for this talk was the line from the Sandokai that gets brought up many times. And I know I brought it up on occasion. It's the one where it says, if from your experience of the senses, basic truth you do not know, how can you ever find the path that certain is, no matter how far distant you may walk? I want to emphasize and sort of draw out a slightly different point in this teaching. But what that line is saying, to kind of put it into prose as opposed to words for singing and so on, is that it's basically saying you can know the basic truth from your experience, and from that you can find the path that is certain, the certain path. But the part I want to emphasize this morning is that it is your experience. So the implication there is a you that's experiencing things. So in other words, as I've talked about previously, and want to come back to today, is that we are all aware of, we all experience being a me. And, you know, it kind of depends on how you want to describe it from your point of view. But one way of describing this is, you know, and I'll do it from my point of view, is the me, the I, is somewhere in here. As one monk put it, sort of, I'm here somewhere, kind of back behind my eyes, in this head here, it would seem, and which is in my body. And, you know, that's a very common experience that we all have. You know, each one of you might give slightly different words to that, but I think it's undeniable that we experience things that way. I'm not saying that's the only way we experience things, but that's certainly one aspect of the way we experience being a me. And part of that experiencing, again, is going back to my kind of formula way of describing it, is that the me, the I, experiences feelings, experiences emotions and thought or mental activity. And I guess the other thing to add in there, I'll make it more explicit, is that the I, the me, is looking out upon the world around me, looking out upon all of you on the screen joined in via Zoom, looking out at all of you here in person. That's my experience. So Dogen, Great Master Dogen, through Shohaku Okamura, they talk about this one aspect of the truth being this persistent sense of individuality, this persistent sense of being a me, another way of saying individuality. And one of the ways of describing that is the me or the I, persistent sense of a me, stays the same. For those of you who would like to look up the passage that I'm about to read from, it's in, again, the book Realizing Genjo Koan. It's going to be on predominantly on page 98 and 99. So this is how Great Master Dogen is talking about what I've just mentioned about this persistent sense of being a me or being an individual. So remember that when Great Master Dogen traveled to China, the usual mode of transportation in those days was by boat. We're talking very small boats, by the way, where you would be up on deck a good part of the time. Presumably you'd sleep below deck, but I'm not quite sure about that. And oftentimes what you would do in those days was you would try to go across the more open sea areas as quickly as possible and then kind of skirt around the shoreline. So you were never out of sight of the shore for safety reasons. Okay, so this is Dogen. Says, if one riding in a boat watches the coast, one mistakenly perceives the coast as moving. If one riding in a boat watches the coast, one perceives the coast as moving. And then he's already showing you the direction he's going in. He's saying, well, you mistakenly perceive the coast as moving. Then he says, if one watches the boat, and I'm not sure if this is Shohaku Okamura adding this or not, but it's in brackets. If one watches the boat, and then in brackets, in relation to the surface of the water, then one notices that the boat is moving. So in other words, there's a way of, and I think our most common experience of this is when we're driving somewhere. Get on I-5 is a really good way of doing that, or 99, something like that. And most of the time it feels like we're just sitting here in this car that's just here, and the scenery is obviously moving. So, and then Dogen says, similarly, when we perceive the body and mind in a confused way and grasp all things with a discriminating mind, what he's just said there is, similarly, when we just carry on behaving as a normal person, we mistakenly think that the self nature of the mind is permanent. We mistakenly think that the self is permanent. We mistakenly think that this perception of being a me or an I is permanent and correct. And then he finishes off by saying, when we intimately practice, i.e. when we do meditation, when we live a contemplative life, when we follow the precepts, when we intimately practice and return right here, it is clear that all things have no fixed self. So when we intimately practice, again, a phrase for when we are doing our practice, when we are meditating, and in meditating, we're simply present with what is right here, right now. As we continue to do that, we come to realize that he says all things. The emphasis I'm wanting to place is that we realize that the me, the I, it isn't a fixed self. And I think what's really important with that way of phrasing it is that the word self is still being used. So again, Dogen has always been very clear in saying that as long as you're alive and kicking, you're going to have this sense of being an individual. You're always going to have this sense of being a me or an I. But the really crucial thing is that Great Master Dogen says that through our practice, we realize it's not a fixed me. In other words, it's not a permanent, unchanging me. Now, what I may have done is just talked about what's going to be talked about in the readings I'm going to continue with, but we'll see here. So Shohaku Okamura continues on by saying, here, Dogen uses the analogy of a person's perception of movement while riding in a boat with the shore in sight. To this person, it may look as if the shore is moving, when in fact it is the boat that moves. In the same way, it usually seems that things around us are changing and moving while we stay the same. And then he continues by saying, and we try to find the underlying principle of this change so that we can control things. Now, this whole area about trying to find underlying principles of this change and controlling things, he goes off into that and talks about that in quite a bit of detail. That's not the direction I want to go in this morning. It's a really, really cool area to go into. So we will probably do that at some point. But notice here, what's really intriguing is that, so he says, in the same way, you know, in the same way as the boat and the shore and how that seems to be going, he says, in the same way, it usually seems that things around us are changing and moving while we stay the same. Okay, so it looks like things are changing around us, that we're staying the same. And so that's actually an incorrect perception. But then we take that incorrect perception and we try to find the underlying principle of that change. So we're kind of adding incorrectness to incorrectness, as it were. So we're trying to look at the underlying principle of this change, which is actually a misperception. And then we're trying to control things. So misperception, add another misperception, and then based on those two misperceptions, we try to control things. We try to make our life work the way we want it to. This is a much more modern way of talking about what the Buddha talked about from the very beginning about the first noble truth, i.e. suffering exists. The suffering exists, or we perpetuate suffering because it's all built on thinking the shore is moving, when in fact it ain't, at least in this analogy. I mean, there could be things moving on the shore, like people and stuff, but we won't add that level of complexity to this discussion yet. Okay, so jumping a bit further on in the commentary from Shohaku Okamura, he says, yet when we intimately practice and return to right here, which is the last couple of sentences that Dogen mentioned, we see that we are impermanent, lack independent existence, and are connected to all things. Now, what's interesting is that those three things that were just stated, the understanding and experience of those things comes, as it were, in sort of those three steps. And the really biggie thing that needs to come to us at some point in small ways or bigger ways is the first thing that he says, which is, we see that we, or putting it in first person, is that I start seeing that I myself, I start seeing that me, the me is impermanent. In other words, it's always changing. And the nature of the fact that it is changing, coming to that understanding and experience, and then the deeper seeing into what's actually going on there, leads us to realize that we don't have an independent existence. Okay, so we're already moving away from, you know, there's that persistent sense of being an individual. But then as we continue the practice, we realize lacking independent existence means that, oh, okay, wait a minute. There's something more than just this sense of individuality. And that sense of something more than individuality is that, the way it's expressed here, is that we are connected to all things. So the phrase that Dogen used, he said, when we intimately practice and return right here, that phrase right here, that's the reality of interdependent origination. Again, just another phrase that references another really important teaching in Buddhism. And Shohaku Okamura says the reality, so independent origination, interdependent origination is the reality in which everything, including human beings, exists within the vast network of causes and conditions. When we become one with this reality, we see that we share the same life with all things, and we learn to relate to the earth and all living beings with care and compassion. Meditation is the practice in which we become intimate with this reality.
Could you repeat that last sentence or two?
Sure.
Please, thank you.
Let me read all of this in one continuous go here. Right here, in quotes, is the reality of interdependent origination, the reality in which everything, including human beings, exists within the vast network of causes and conditions. When we become one with this reality, we see that we share the same life with all things, and we learn to relate to the earth and all living beings with care and compassion. Meditation is the practice in which we become intimate with this reality. So I think that we all start from, and certainly it continues to be there, but we start from realizing that we're conscious, or that we have awareness, and that consciousness or awareness seems to be in here. This is my body, this is my mind, and all of the things that go with that. So just to clarify again, the line from the Sando Kai, oftentimes the direction it gets talked about is having to do with the experience of the senses and the sense objects. What I'm really wanting to do is focus on the experience of being a me. You know, don't worry about the stuff out there right now. What I find really interesting is that I can remember, you know, when I first started at the Priory back in my mid-20s, and, you know, certainly as a young monk, which was a few years later, we have one of the core teachings in Buddhism is that of anicca, the law of change, impermanence. Everything is always changing. And I certainly agreed with that. And what I kind of maybe hasten to add that I agreed with that from my intellect or from my mind. It's like, well, of course. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And the teachings in Buddhism about all the ramifications of change and impermanence, it's like, yeah, I agree with that completely. And then you come back to your day-to-day life, your day-to-day experience. And it was, there's this kind of entrenched, persistent sense of being a me. And it's like, well, that's the way it's always been up into my 20s and beyond. And that's what I'm used to. And so one just kind of carries on with that, even though the teachings in Buddhism are obviously pointing to something more and other than that. But it's kind of like you wake up in the morning and, huh, there's a me again. And you carry on from there. And my guess is that I know it was the case with me when I woke up this morning. Oh, there you are again. Pretty sure it was the case for most of you. And I want to say that that's actually not a problem. That's fine. That's there. You know, again, recall that Dogen says that you're always going to have this sense of individuality. But keep doing your meditation. Keep doing your practice. Keep following the precepts. Just keep doing that. Have your me do that. Have your I, your have yourself do that. You know, and similarly, as is very often the case, as is always the case, If at times you realize that you've created karma, that you've caused harm or hurt, both to yourself or others, carry on with your practice and do what seems best to do in making amends for that, you know, fixing things and seeing more deeply into the patterns that led to that, and do your best to grow and change, and try not to do that as much. And maybe this is a what I'm going to say next is a result of having been kicking around in this world for over 60 years now. Maybe it doesn't occur when earlier times in one's life, but what I'd like to throw into all of that mix also about doing your meditation, doing your practice, allow time to unfold. In other words, let things just kind of the natural course, the natural order of just the unfolding of our lives happen. And I think part of the implication of those things, or what one can pull out of that, is it's not all going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in 7 days. So allow time to unfold. One of the interesting things, and I looked it up because I couldn't quite remember, is Great Master Dogen, he traveled from Japan to China. He was on this boat when he got this experience that he just wrote about that I read. He was 23 years old when he traveled to China. And he stayed there and returned to Japan at the age of 27. Now, possibly he could have been like Reverend Master Daizui, in the sense that Reverend Master Daizui maintains that even as a very, very young person, he was already overly mature. So Great Master Dogen could have been fairly mature in many respects, even though he was in his 20s. Part of me, though, wants to say, though, nevertheless, he was actually a really young guy when he went to China. And he probably had a fairly youthful body and mind at that time, even if it was maybe more mature. And that really is important to look at, because that's part of our experience of the senses, each and every one of us, the experience of our bodies and minds. Now, since I'm the me that I am, I can't speak for the rest of you, so I won't. But you fill in the blanks. I know it's going to be slightly different, but this is just one narration to give you kind of a sense of how I'm looking at things. But up to the age of 40, you know, I'd been in the monastery over a decade by then, but up until about the age of 40, I felt like I was still in the same body and mind I was in when I was a late teenager and in my early 20s. It was still the same body and mind, if I can put it that way. Something happened after that, though. when I say the same body, what I mean is it still had that same kind of recognizable level of energy. It had that same level of strength, flexibility, coordination. It still kind of felt the same way. So in other words, it was still functioning the way it had been since my early 20s. And what's interesting about that is that, so, you know, leading up to that point, so for 40 odd years, it was consistent. It was dependable. You know, I'm referring to both the body and my mind. And what's interesting is that because it was consistent and dependable, unbeknownst to me, I just, you know, took it as a refuge. It's like, okay, yeah. You know how it is when you're in your early 20s, it's kind of like, well, that's the way life's going to be. But this is the way life is. I'm putting it in those terms because, you know, now more than 20 years on, there are times when I don't even recognize this body. Dogen has the phrase where he says, at this moment, this body is not my own. And I'm like, oh, right. You know, and it's saying I don't recognize it or saying sometimes I'm almost incredulous, like this isn't my body. And of course, it's based on memory. But what I'm implying there is that the change that's happened, and I know most of you are way ahead of me on this, is that the change has been radical enough, severe enough, intense enough, fill in the blank, where it's like, oh, it's not dependable, not in the way that I was thinking it was. It's not a refuge in the way I had hoped or thought it would be. I mean, the thing that's dawned on me most vividly in the last year or so is that I used to, no matter what I would get up to during the day, there was always that refuge of sleeping at night. Mm-hmm. You recharge the batteries, you know, you just, everything goes blank. You know, it's like turning the computer off or something. And it's just a fresh start in the morning. I would be hard pressed to remember when I last remember that happening in the sense that I'm talking about. You know, and we could equally, you know, talk about the whole, you know, this is mostly talking about body, but equally we can talk about mind. And I'll make it very brief in just saying that I'm, okay, there are still some aspects of my mind that I still have abilities, certain areas that I'm good at, that I've learned and so on, that I can call up and do things with. But now it's like, you really perceive the energy it takes to get that going again, and to get that, it's like, oh, you know, dust off the cobwebs and so on. So again, it's you know, the phrase about if from the experience of the senses, and what I've just talked about, well, this is the experience of the senses. Within this sense of being a me or an I, there's the experiencing of body and mind taking this trajectory, changing in these ways. And again, it's just very natural and very normal that when we are younger, by and large, because the body and mind seem to be a certain way and persist in being a certain way for some time, we rely on it, we take refuge in it, we kind of make assumptions about it and so on. And this isn't exclusive to when we're young. I bet some of us, even in our older years, still do that too. Kind of take refuge in or kind of make assumptions that, you know, how the body is now or how the mind is now, we're gonna rely on that. Put in this sort of assumption that, oh, it's gonna be that way, or that's the way it is. We have the phrase about, you know, a shot across the bow, and it oftentimes gets used in the sense of being a wake-up call. And I think what I've been describing, this unfolding of things, there can be times when this is going on, when, because the change can be so dramatic or radical, that it shifts our experience, and with that, it shifts our understanding of more deeply what's really going on. And it becomes very clear that we actually, our bodies, our minds, they're the way they are right now, but really that's it. We can't say anything. We can't make any reliable statement about what about tomorrow, you know, the future. And the shift can happen enough that we realize that we aren't our bodies, we aren't our minds. What is there then? And what I would like to do is bring up an analogy, try to verbally describe an image that you may find helpful as a way of kind of picturing possibly what's going on. So I had grandparents that lived over in Central Oregon, and so would oftentimes be over there visiting them. And as many of you know, Central Oregon is really hot in the summer. And one of the interesting phenomena that occur, which utterly delighted me as a young person, possibly as a budding science interested type, was that, you know, out in the open dusty fields, when it gets really hot, you get these really cool little dust devils that arise in a field and spin around and go moving along. And so you get these little whirlwinds, these swirls of dust and sort of plant debris. I remember the occasional little bits and pieces of tumbleweeds, and maybe there was stubble from maybe it was a farm field or something that would get all mixed up in it. You know, they're kind of, at least the ones I remember, were kind of human-sized, you know, maybe 10 feet tall at the most. They weren't monsters. Who knows? I haven't been over there for a while in the summer. Maybe they've changed again. But I think the one thing that, you know, I remember noticing a few times that I even went running after one once, and it would, you know, it was, if it was a kind of clear, open, dusty field, it would persist for quite a while. It would just be swirling around and kind of walking across, you know, different fields and so on. And I think eventually I got to a point where I ran into a fence and couldn't follow it beyond that. But so again, there was something that it persisted. But I know that, you know, it wasn't there in the morning. You know, it had to get really hot at some point, and you can watch this kind of little initial swirlings going on, and eventually it would build and start walking across the field. And I've been able to verbally describe it. It has a name. So it's a something that's happening. And, you know, if you learn a little bit about kind of the science or the physics of what's happening, I think it's even neater to see why it's going on and so on. And I feel that for myself, our own personal experience and our kind of description of being a body and mind, it's actually somewhat similar to one of these little dust devils. And, you know, how so? Well, I don't know about you, but there have been times when I'm sitting down and meditating and the brain, the mind is just swirling like crazy. And things kind of come in, swirl around, and at least in the past, they don't seem to go away too easily either. You know, if you think of us as being an aware or conscious little dust devil, it's literally things do kind of swirl into our awareness. Physical sensations, feelings, and then just mental thoughts and activities. And our bodies, they're very similar to the way, you know, the lifespan of a dust devil. You know, we start out pretty small. I don't know about all of you, but or I wasn't the one that caused myself to come into existence. I wasn't the one who made myself get born. It sort of happened. Just like a little dust devil happens, there are certain causes and conditions that occur, and it starts off really tiny, and depending on the conditions, it grows. And similar to dust devils, I mean, dust devils eventually, they kind of migrate along and conditions become such that they start, what happens is the dust gets pulled up from the ground, sort of hoovered up vacuumed up and it goes up to the top and sort of spits out the top. And eventually it all just kind of falls apart into a shower of dust on the ground again. Not too dissimilar to what happens to us physically during our life cycle. I've brought this up in the past and, you know, using different analogies, but the thing about a little dust devil is that it's swirling around. It's sort of a circle. It's a loop. It kind of loops back on itself. And in doing so, it creates an appearance of sort of this entity that we give words to and say, oh, there's that little dust devil. There's that little dust swirl. But it's the fact that we, as it were, kind of swirl back on ourselves, loop back on ourselves, the fact that we're in kind of this sort of tightly looped, contained way, that, you know, it's happening within awareness and a consciousness, but because it kind of loops back on itself, that gives us a sense of being a me or an I. And yet what can be problematic is that because the normal unfolding for most of us is that there's this sort of persisting sense of the body being a certain way for several decades, and our minds being a certain way for quite some time too, we take the stuff that's swirling around to be me. And yet the real beauty is that as we get older, as we do allow time to unfold, the dust devil, the swirling dust matures in its life cycle, in the sense of the trajectory of that is that it starts moving in the direction of dissipating again. So we start recognizing that the reason the body and the mind are the way it is has to do with other causes and conditions. The reason a dust devil comes into being is because there's dust available, dare I say clay. It's hot out, you know, there's a certain temperature going on, you know, and I won't belabor all of the different factors going on there, but it's sort of like when those conditions are there, this additional thing arises within it. But it's more, you can equally say it, because there are dust devils, you can say, oh, okay, there's a dusty field there. And there's, I don't know, I'm guessing there's a certain temperature range that the air's at. So the dust devil is actually can be looked at from the other perspective as it's an expression of the temperature and the conditions of the dust and the field. So you don't have one without the other. And what I'm leading to is what that's pointing us to is that there's actually not any separateness between the dust devil and the hot temperature and the dust and all these other things. They're all one. If you find this analogy helpful, you can go about your day as being this conscious, aware little dust devil. And causes and conditions change throughout our day. And so various thoughts will come swirling into our heads. Various physical sensations and emotions will come swirling in. The really key step that seems to occur within that, or the key opportunity and choice we have, is are we going to latch on to those feelings, emotions, thoughts as who we are? And let's say the who we are, the stuff that's swirling around right now, we kind of like. So we try to hold on to that, right? As Shohaku Okamura said previously, we try to control things. But somewhere within all of this mix of this swirl of our daily life, of our daily practice of meditation, keeping the precepts, it clarifies that the current feelings and emotions and thoughts are there because of causes and conditions that we're actually not in charge of or in control of. So our growing clarification of this situation, our growing wisdom with all of this is, oh, wait a minute. If I want this to persist and take the steps to get it to persist, I'm setting myself up for suffering. But what we're also doing is we're setting ourselves up to experiencing separateness. We're setting ourselves up for not being present with the compassion and care that's inherently there within the universe. So we can start taking refuge in meditation, the practice, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Taking refuge in it is coming back to, oh, at the moment, I'm this certain little type of dust devil with these various things swirling around. Oh, isn't that interesting? But oh, gee, look, that swirling around isn't separate from the causes and conditions that got it going. And oh, look, those causes and conditions are there because of other causes and conditions. And eventually, we start experiencing interdependent origination. We start experiencing directly that unity, that oneness with all things. At the moment, I'm a certain little dust devil. That's fine. Because it is one with all things, it's not lacking for anything whatsoever. Even though at the moment the experience is that of, I don't know, pain, isolation. It shouldn't be this way. I don't want it this way, etc. Don't worry, it won't be that way forever. Usually much less than forever, actually. So I don't want to talk too much more about kind of where this awareness, this practice all keeps leading to, as wonderful and beautiful as it is. And yes, that experience, that understanding will very naturally arise, unfold. But keep coming back to your daily meditation, your daily practice. Keep coming back to awareness of body and mind. Keep coming back to just softening to and opening to just the causes and conditions that are there. And just by continuing to do that, it's the key, it's the door, it's the opening to all of this. And that's why Great Master Dogen talks about this human life that we have is actually the intersection of individuality and what he calls universality, the interdependent origination, the oneness of all things. I mean, if we personify a dust devil, which is a little bit tricky, but the mistake that could be made as a little dust devil is that we think that we made ourselves the dust devil. We think we made ourselves who we are. And therefore, we're the ones that need to continue making ourselves who we are. It's much simpler. It's much easier than that. We just give ourselves to the causes and conditions. Just allow them to keep unfolding. The universe knows what to do with you. Just let it keep doing that. Let it keep unfolding you. I mean, to me, this is a yet again another really way of talking about describing how our Soto Zen practice, it's fundamentally based in complete trust of the life we're in and the allowing of it to just keep unfolding.